Welcome to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, and we are here for Rookie Running Back Preview Part 2. We have the man that is better equipped to do that than just about anybody else, Emory Hunt. You know him on Twitter, at FBallGamePlan. I think that's the way Adam Azer said it on Wednesday. I liked that. Emory, what is up? Thank you for being here.
Nah, pleasure being on the show, man. You guys do a lot of fantastic work. I gave you guys all your flowers on my dentist and how he loves, you know, you guys and is a loyal listener. So it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Emory, I want you to just take a moment here at the very top because I want people to know how much work and effort you've put into this class. Tell them a little bit about your draft guide and where they can find it.
Listen, and this is a cool part about, I don't want to say cool part, but this is kind of the benefit of what COVID kind of helped us out because we were all able to sit down in 2020 and that allowed me to put out a digital draft guide. Cause at first I used to throw all this information out on YouTube and really didn't have context to what I was saying, right? In terms of like, hey, here's my number one ranked player. And it just had a number grade on the side. But with the draft guide, you can actually see strengths, areas of improvements. So if you've been purchasing a draft guide since 2020, right now you are sitting on over 4,300 individual scouting reports. And this year's draft guide has over 900 players because a lot of guys went back to school. And we're excited about it. It's a three-month process, probably my most taxing process, including calling games and all throughout what you see me do during the season. So putting this together, this draft guide, traveling to all the different 9 all-star games is fun. So folks can go pick that up at footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. It's the best information out there. Biggest draft guide you could find because it has all individual scouting reports, no list.
900. Did you say 900 players?
Yes.
Holy cow. Go get that draft guide, folks. On today's show, we will be talking about running back 6 through 10 by current Dynasty League Football rookie ADP. Those are Marshawn Lloyd, Ray Davis, Bucky Irving, Audric Estime. I think I said that right this time. And Will Shipley. We're also going to go into, in just a moment here, Emory's running back evaluation process. And then if we have a little bit of time at the end of the show, we'll get into some of those running back sleepers that you might be able to find in round 3 or round 4 of your rookie drafts. But Emory, we start every show with 3 questions for our guest. And I do want to just start with kind of what is your process for evaluating these running backs as they make the transition from college to the NFL?
Listen, it's unique because being as old as I am, I'm 42. You've seen the transition over time, right? Where it used to be all about, can this guy carry the ball 20 to 25 times a game? And now you're starting to think in terms of, okay, this is a tandem backfield type of a guy. Rarely are you seeing now the solo King Henry types where you dot the I and that's your guy, right? Because these guys going back to high school, even in peewee leagues, are not being conditioned that way anymore. So you're getting the fact that a lot of these guys that we're talking about in the last 3 or 4 drafts, you find a rare nugget that can be a solo guy. But for the most part, we're talking about guys that's going to work in a tandem. And so that's how they're conditioned. And also in a way kind of altered their vision a little bit because they're playing, on side of the quarterback more so than behind the quarterback. So they're really seeing front side as opposed to tackle, how we used to know the position to be. So there is some adjustment for some of these guys because a lot of times the NFL may ask you to play behind, but for the most part, you're playing on side, so you're used to it. That's why we're also seeing this position, as always, as it has been, one of the easier transitions to make going from college to pro.
So I do want to ask a follow-up to that, because on Tuesday, part one of the running back preview, I asked this question to J.J. Zachariasen, and I want to get your take on it. The consensus opinion has seemed to be that this is a pretty down year for the running back class. If you agree with that, is it because there's not really a true workhorse back or because there are not guys that possess elite skills? Are there some elite skills out there, just not guys that compare multiple elite skills?
You know, that's a great question, and I do feel like it's a little bit of both. Last year, we're talking about Gibbs and Bijan. Because they had the elite skills, they had elite traits, they had explosive traits, and it was just a combination of all of those things, right? This year, one guy may have one thing, another guy may have another, but rarely do you see one has the full package, and you have more questions about this group as opposed to last year's group. And it's not to say that there's not starters in this group, but this is the class where you can say we can probably wait until day two to take a running back, as opposed to saying where will a Bijan Robinson go, or where will a Jahmyr Gibbs go, kind of like that. So it's about what we've seen this year in college and the completeness of a person's game, juxtaposed to elite talents at receiver, elite talents at tackle, and quarterback as well. It's going to push everything down in terms of the running back position.
Awesome stuff. So question two now, even though it's question three. On Tuesday, we talked about the top five guys in terms of current dynasty rookie ADP. And those names right now are Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Jalen Wright, Blake Corum, and Braylon Allen. That order is going to change a lot after the draft. I know it's not necessarily your top five, but I do wonder, since we're not really going to get into those guys today, I do want your opinion. How would you rank or tier that group of running backs?
You know, I still like Braylon Allen number one, and the reason why I like him number one is his youth. Stu started college at, 17 years old?
Yep.
And was toting the rock at 17 in the Big Ten. And people see 6'1", 240, and think he's a plotter. But I feel like he has very quiet footwork and underrated acceleration. And I'm not making this comparison as a one-to-one, but his style is sort of like Derrick Henry, where it doesn't look fast, but you rarely see him, you know, get walked down. Now, Allen is not as fast as Henry, but the same running style in terms of like a deceptive acceleration, and allows him to rip these long runs that we saw him rip off in college. But I feel like when you look at this, and we'll get to my number two guy here on the back end of this 6 through 10 that we're going to talk about, that's Marshawn Lloyd. But I feel like when you brought up two of the backs, and this is the common theme for a lot of these guys, for some of these guys, Jonathan Brooks and also Trey Benson, you have knee injury history. And right. We know the league kind of wants to find every reason to pay you less, right? and I will say this about Jonathan Brooks, though. I interviewed him at the combine, and he was so smooth and such a smooth walker, I forgot he tore his ACL. I didn't even ask him about it, because there was no noticeable limp. There was no brace. There was no scarring, you know, that you kind of, oh, wow, he had a knee injury. He walked perfectly fine. And I like the fact that Benson, you know, saw himself get back to what we saw from him at Oregon. I spoke with him at the combine as well. And he talked about, you know, how he dealt with the depression of getting injured and really didn't feel like himself until this past season. So you like that he's slowly getting back on that trajectory of being what he was coming out of high school, which was an insanely explosive talent. And you saw some of that explosiveness in bursts this year at Florida State. So you like that they're on the upswing in terms of injury. And then, you know, you think about those guys and you're like, okay, this is a situation where they could have some opportunities here. And I'm also a big Isaiah Davis fan of South Dakota State, who was my number three back. You know, the reason why I like him, he's played in a tandem. He was behind Pierre Strong his freshman year at South Dakota State, but he was arguably the one that garnered a lot of interest from scouts as a freshman, because like, man, who's his backup? And they went to the national championship game against Sam Houston, and he had a huge run. And then you saw him just consistently add to his game throughout the course of his career. Ended up at the Senior Bowl. Shows you how much talent he had and put out there on film at South Dakota State.
I love that answer. And I love the fact that you kind of like you kind of answered question three. Who's your favorite running back in this class that I've not mentioned yet? That's going to be Isaiah Davis. So let's give people a bonus answer. Like, you know, the names that we talked about last week at the top five, you know who we're talking about today, the top 10. We've got Isaiah Davis. Give me one more back that we're not going to talk about today that you really like.
Isaiah Garrido. Yes. And here's why. If you like Jalen Wright, then you should also like Garrido, because they both have explosive home run hitting speed, and both kind of, and here's how they can affect, I don't know how this affects fantasy football, but here's how they can affect the game this season right away with the new kickoff rule. You know, these are guys you want handling the kickoff, because now you can create blocking, real like run play blocking assignments up front, and you want someone back there that has the vision of reading things out, being patient, and then exploding through a hole as a lane pops open. Wright has that home run hitting speed. Guerrero has that home run hitting speed. And a guy like a Jaden Sheridan out of Monmouth has that home run hitting speed. So we may see it go back to the old school way of letting the tailback return kickoffs. And a guy like Guerrero had kickoff return experience at Wisconsin. He's 6 feet, 220. Kind of reminds me of like Michael Turner, the burner. And remember how Michael Turner started his career with San Diego. He was a kickoff returner, then played behind, you know, Sproles and LT. Then he gets the opportunity to start a couple games, kind of wild people, and got that big contract with the Falcons and had a really good career with Atlanta. So it's possible for these guys like Jalen Wright and also Guerrero to start as dynamic kickoff returners and then see a lane open up for them as potential RB2s or even RB1 in some situations.
You mentioned that kick return and the change. I've been a proponent for a long time of incorporating kickoff return yards, punt return yards, kickoff return touchdowns into fantasy football. I have a few leagues that do. There's a lot of people that push back about it. But those yards and touchdowns count in a real football game just the same way they do if they're from scrimmage. So I'm hopeful that with these new rules, we get more kickoffs, people get more into it. Maybe we do see that factoring in fantasy football scoring in more leagues. Let's take a short break, and then we will jump into RB 6 through 10 according to current rookie ADP. Okay, so you teased it. We are going to RB 6, but not RB 6 for you, RB 2 for you. It's Marshawn Lloyd, running back out of USC, 22 years old, 5'9", 220 pounds, got that 4.4 speed. Is this guy, as your second favorite running back in the class, a potential feature back in the NFL?
I do think he has starter potential. I compare this game to Aaron Jones. I feel like he has the right fluidity that you want to run with. Everything just seems like it fits, almost like how you draw it up on the whiteboard where, okay, we're going to run this 34 lead and, you know, the guard is going to kick out the three tech and the fullback is going to lead on the backer and it's going to pop open right here. And he hits it at the same time as it's opening up. What shocked me about him was you studying him, you watching him, you thinking, okay, now my running back grades were done before the combine. So I'm watching him, and I'm like, oh, wow, this dude plays like he's, you know, he looks 5'11", 225. You told me if he was 5'11", 215, I would have like, yeah, that checks out. It looks smart. Then he measured in at the Senior Bowl like 5'9", 205. I was like, wow. Like, I didn't realize that he plays a little bit bigger than his size in a good way. But he has the ability to hit the home run. He's fluid. I think he's very underrated as a receiver. And I do feel like he is someone that can end up being a starter. But again, this is the type of guys you can get outside of round one, which is why I think there's tremendous value in this class in terms of running backs.
This is a strong physical back as well, right? Like, I think when we look at this, there's really two key roles to have in terms of fantasy football. You want the guy who's going to be handling the rock inside the 10, inside the 5, at the goal line, scoring touchdowns. And then you want the guys, because so much of fantasy football has gone towards PPR, you want the guy who's on the field on third downs, the guy who's involved in the passing game. It looked to me like, from Lloyd's profile, he's more likely to have that short yardage red zone role than he is the third down passing downs role. Would you agree with that?
And he also excelled at South Carolina in that capacity. So You look at him going out to USC and building on that gives you that impression that you got, which is true. And the unique thing about him, this is one of the criticisms about him. He is one of those guys that feels like he has to hit the hole right away. You'll see him at times running to the back of his lineman, and then it'll work out for him. Go watch the game against Colorado. You'll see that play out on one of his long touchdown runs. Ran right to the back of the lineman, then reversed his field and went down the sideline for like a 45-yard touchdown run. Now, granted, it's Colorado's defense. So you could do that against Colorado's defense last year. But those are some of the things that are going to have to really slow down his process to where he could rip off more runs from distance.
Now, I assume, like, for all these guys, we're hoping for day two draft capital. We can deal with day three for several of them, but is there a system or a team where you think that Lloyd would really thrive? Is there a certain running back run game philosophy that you think fits Lloyd better than others?
I mean, before they picked up Aaron Jones, I mean, Minnesota would have been perfect for him. Aaron Jones went to the Raiders, right?
Yeah. No, to Minnesota.
To Minnesota, right? So that would have been a perfect spot. It still could be a perfect spot for him, for a guy like Lloyd. And here's the thing. New Orleans could be a spot, because I feel like with Alvin Kamara, he needs someone that could take the pressure away from him so he can be Alvin Kamara. Denver could be a spot. Sean Payton needs someone that he can kind of count on, as everyone else around him seems to be more of the complimentary guy. Even, you know, the big back out of UNC. I feel like those guys would probably be best suited as a RB2 as opposed to leading off in the backfield.
So it sounds like somebody who it might be good if he starts off in a situation where he can have that clear early downs role, be the hammer in the offense, score the touchdowns, and then maybe develop more as a pass catcher as his career goes on.
Well, here's the thing, and that's why I love going to the different All-Star games, because guys don't, you know, get involved in the passing game in college doesn't mean they can't catch. You know, they just wasn't used that way. So when you're watching at these All-Star games, that's your opportunity to jot down how they catch the football, how comfortable they are catching the ball away from his body, and he was checking out all those boxes. So I'm not worried about him as a receiver moving forward.
I think that is very encouraging to people, because there are a lot of people who are evaluating these guys, and when they look at the receiving numbers, they're either going to look at the receptions or they'll look at that target share as a part of the team. And those numbers for Lloyd don't make you think of somebody who's going to be more involved in the passing game. So good news, Emory Hunt says he does possess those skills. Hopefully we see them get used a little bit more in the NFL. Let's take a look at now at RB6 in the current rookie ADP. That is Ray Davis out of Kentucky. Another shorter back, we'll say 5'8", 211, 24 years old, 4.5 speed. This guy did have a little bit more experience as a receiver, right?
Yeah, and that's someone that has like top-notch elusiveness. I like his ability to make a guy miss. And that's what you need when you are looking at a back of shorter stature. You have the natural low center of gravity, and you're able to change directions rather quickly. The problem with Davis is the obvious one that you brought up, is the age, right? So you kind of wonder, okay, you know, what's his ceiling? Can we get 4 years of high level play from him? And will teams overlook, you know, his size and say, okay, if we get this guy in as an older player, where does he fit in? Is he more along the lines of a Deion Lewis or, you know, James White? Or is it someone that we need to feed him carries? And I think that's a question that, you know, teams are going to have to ask themselves when they pick up a Ray Davis. But the vision, elusiveness, the ability to make a guy miss, he doesn't need volume, even though he got volume at Kentucky. So I think that kind of helps him out. But it's tough when you're thinking about from a fantasy football perspective. I know it's year to year, but dynasty is like looking at it long term. OK, how much bang for my buck am I going to get for a Ray Davis? Is it going to be a, you know, grab and trade, grab and stash, or, you know, dash, or kind of like, I can trust that he's going to be a guy for me for at least four seasons. So that right there is tough to call, but you like the talent. His is going to be really dependent on situation.
Yeah. And I think that's why it kind of surprises me that Davis is at 7 at this age. And maybe we're just early enough in the process where a lot of people aren't thinking that way. I almost think I'd like him better if he falls into day 3 and maybe falls a little bit in rookie drafts, because he does seem like the type of player. And I'll make kind of two different comparisons. First, we've had several of the day 3 backs who come in as rookies and really help a team out and make a fantasy impact. And then by year 2, they've been disappeared. Then Thanos snapped the fingers. They're not really hugely involved in the NFL. But at Davis, at 24 years old, maybe a little more mature than some of the other guys, maybe more well-equipped to come in and make an impact if there's an injury in year 1 and then kind of disappear. The other thing I was going to ask you about, we had 3 backs last year, and they're different types of running backs. They're different levels of skill, but we were talking about them as kind of a scale last year. Devon Achane, Keaton Mitchell, Jaleel McLaughlin. Like, those 3 backs don't really still profile as the kind of guy that's going to touch the ball 20 times in a game very often. But they're so good on a per-touch basis that they can matter for us in fantasy football with 10 or 12 touches. Davis can be that kind of guy, right?
Well, here's a special thing about Davis that it doesn't count for fantasy, but it kind of does count for fantasy because he's going to get his butt on the field. He is very good in pass pro. We know teams love to trust guys that can block, right? He knows who to block, and he does a great job in getting in the way and executing the block. So that's going to get him on the field on third down and kind of have him sustain a role to where, okay, well, if he could block, okay, let's throw him a couple passes. Okay, wow, he can catch. We know he can run. Let's kind of leave him out there for a series or two and see how it goes, right? And that's how you kind of see those guys weave their way into a sustained role. Now, he's not as explosive as Keaton Mitchell. He's not as, super dynamic as a Jaleel McLaughlin, but he's talented. He's well-rounded. He can catch. He can block. He's a smart football player. Just has to get a little bit stronger. But, you know, you can do that moving forward. But I like the fact that he can block. So maybe in that sense, he does have some fantasy value because we know that's going to get you on the field.
One of the things I've said in the past about somebody like DeAndre Swift is, and you noticed it in Philadelphia last year, if you've got a hole that's 5 yards wide, I want the ball in DeAndre Swift's hands because of what he's going to do with that open space. If I've got a hole that's like 6 inches wide, I'd like to have somebody else because they're gonna get into that gap. Is Davis, I've seen so many highlight videos of him just making a fool out of a defensive back or a linebacker in the open field. How does he do when things are a little bit muddier in tighter spaces?
Well, because of that elusiveness. And that's why I like DeAndre Swift that in that class. He was my RB1. Yep. And here's the thing, a lot of times coaching can coach the playmaking out of a player and say, hey, man, you got to hit that hole.
Right.
You know, but sometimes the playmaker's mindset is like, I can get around that hole and make it happen. We saw this clash with Reggie Bush and Sean Payton at first when Bush was losing carries to a Pierre Thomas or Deuce McAllister, who was excellent, by the way. Was like, man, you drafted Reggie because he's Reggie. Like, he could do that. You know, the average back can't. But Ray Davis, I feel like, is shorter, smaller enough to where he can squirt through the hole. You see this a lot with Blake Corum, too.
Yeah.
Like, he can find a way to make a way, you know, through a muddy area. But it's you hope he goes to a coach that doesn't coach the playmaking out of him, because you see that a lot.
That is Ray Davis out of Kentucky. Let's move on to RB8. I'd be interested to know where Bucky Irving was before the NFL Combine. That wasn't the best day in his life so far. But Bucky Irving, out of Oregon, 5'9", 192, 21 years old. That's a good thing. The speed, 4.5, maybe a little bit disappointing. Maybe we should start with, like, how much did the Combine change your opinion of him, if at all? Or is it just about how much it's going to change certain NFL teams' opinions about him?
It's going to change NFL teams about him because, you know, again, my running back grades were done before the Combine. So right. I had Bucky Irving behind Blake Corum. And it was funny because it's a situation where your eyes can deceive you, to where you're looking at him and you're like, oh boy, he's moving fast, but he's moving fast, but he's not really going anywhere, right? It's like he's more quick than fast. Everything just moving fast. You kind of like a little bit like Isaiah Pacheco, where you like, man, he's running fast. Like, no, he's not, man. He's just moving real fast. But Irvin is more quick than fast. So and I think people just expected him to run this blazing 4.3. But when you combine his quickness and his elusiveness and his ability to hit the hole, There is a situation for him to be a spot guy, right? Like the Jaleel McLaughlin for a team. And he has been someone that has been able to tote the rock, as a feature back for Oregon, right? And so that's something that has value. But if you can get past the explosive speed, yeah, 4.5 is still rather fast. You know what I'm saying? It's not like 4.3, but he's more quicker than he is faster than other backs in the class. And I do feel like he has some room to, you know, play small. He has to, you know, you could be small, but you can't play small.
Right.
So sometimes he goes down on an arm tackle. Like, he has to be able to run through that. And that's where you kind of separate because this is a lot of shorter backs in this class, a lot of 5'7 guys in this class, even though he came in at 5'9", about 195, you can't play small. And I think that's an area where he's going to have to grow.
Okay, and this is a guy who was used extensively in the passing game, 53 catches his last year at Oregon. How much of that is Oregon and how much of that is that he has the skill set to really be a great pass catcher as a running back.
I mean, hell, it's they're one and the same because we see this with Dylan Lauby out of New Hampshire. If they're spamming targets to you, you can't help but catch them, right? Otherwise, they're going to stop throwing you the ball. So, yeah, we're going to give you 15 targets. Like, obviously, he's comfortable catching the football, so why not? It's the most efficient pass play to dumping off to a back that has elusiveness. Why not? And so you can't knock him for it. It enhances what he does. Now, can he be developed into a downfield route runner? We talked to Bijan Robinson at the combine last year, and I asked him about how he was able to develop as a downfield threat. He said, well, after practice, me and my running backs coach and receivers coach used to practice running routes, like downfield threats. So that's a teachable skill for Bucky Irvin, but he already has the ability to catch the ball. So you kind of like that about him because, again, he caught so much at Oregon.
At his size, is pass protection a problem, or is he okay at that as well?
Well, you can't play small. So you already know what that means for pass pro. Like, he's going to try to cut block everything. So he's very much a liability right now. And let me say this, too, for running backs. It's not that running backs are free to block. Is that two things. One, nobody wants to get run over and get laughed at in the film room. Right. So you always have that in your mind. But most importantly, it's technique. So guys are jumping away, but their feet are not set. Their hands are out here and they just get run over. So if you can and sometimes they may not know who to block. Like they may be able to execute the block, but they may not know which backer is blitzing and may jump in the wrong gap and the guy cross blitzes across the other way. And it's like now you out. Now you see him reaching and trying to get back across the formation. So it's a lot of technical issues and knowing who to block. For Irvin, I do feel like him getting stronger, him getting better technique, and him being a little bit more confident when he makes contact. Like sometimes guys make contact and it's just no different than a fly hitting a windshield, right? You got to really be assertive in your contact. If you get run over, cool. But at least you were able to occupy him for at least a second or two, gives the quarterback enough time to maybe hit a pass downfield.
Last thing on Bucky Irvin, and we'll see if you agree with this. It's kind of a statement, kind of a question. RB8 still, he's fallen a little bit since the combine. RB8, I think, still probably too high in this class based on what's going to happen on draft day. Is this the type of guy that we could not just be on day three, but a little later into day three saying, oh, we thought he'd be gone by now?
No, I think he, again, we kind of alluded to it, and I wish it had fantasy value. But his kickoff return background is huge. And so we just talked about how getting a guy that has running back, that is a running back to return kickoffs, especially if he has kickoff return in his history, Bucky Irvin is going to go early on day three because of that reason, because now he's an added asset to help a football team as a rookie on special teams. But as far as fantasy is concerned, that doesn't help you much right now.
Great stuff from Emory Hunt. Let's take a short break and we'll get back with RB9 and RB10. I'm not sure there's a bigger juxtaposition than the guy we talked about before the break, Bucky Irvin, and the guy we're going to talk about next, Audric Estime out of Notre Dame, 5'11", 221. This dude's big and strong, still just 20 years old, but it's like 4.7 speed, basically, right? Did score 30 touchdowns over the last two seasons. This guy seems like just solely a hammer.
Yeah, and he, to his credit, he did run 4.5 at his pro day. So he was able to improve that time. What I like about Estime is I think he has underrated vision, and so if you could see it, your eyes will lead your feet there as well. He has very underrated footwork for such a bigger back. Now, he's not explosive speed wise, but he is someone that can kind of be that pace setter. So if you're thinking, I'm gonna use three different backs here and to compare him to. He's a less explosive version of AJ Dillon, but he's also sort of has a vision and footwork of a Deontay Foreman. And we saw him have some success, and he's kind of built like Jordan Howard. So when you think about those three backs, it screams, okay, we're going to pair him up with a Bucky Irvin or with, a Dylan Lauby or a Will Shipley and get the both the best out of both guys. Because I do feel like what he was able to put out on film is impressive, especially when you watch him against Duke, when you watch him against Notre Dame, against Clemson, and you watch him be able to pick and slide his way through, find an open lane, and yeah, he's a one-cut downhill accelerator, but those are the type of guys that nobody wants to tackle for 60 minutes. And so he's going to have a 21 carry, 98 yard game and be very productive in that role. You worry about his ability to catch the football consistently. And that's where fantasy gets into play. It's like, okay, well, he may not have the receiving upside, but he may be the one to get the start in the game and be the lead dog. Like if he goes to Tennessee and they pair him up with a Tajay Spears, or he goes to New York and they pair him up with a Devin Singletary, then the value starts to shift a little bit.
Right. I think it's, that's a complicated relationship that fantasy managers have with that trio, A.J. Dillon, Deontay Foreman, and Jordan Howard. So I want to get into the less explosive A.J. Dillon, because he has some traits, I would assume, also that are, because a less explosive A.J. Dillon with all of the rest of A.J. Dillon's traits, probably not playing in the NFL for very long. What are the things that you would say that he's better than A.J. Dillon at?
His footwork is a little bit cleaner. I was able to go scout Dillon live up at Boston College, and Dillon as a younger player was legit. Like man, you got to make somebody miss, bro. Like you just can't plow into human bodies consistently over the course of a game.
Right.
And then him as a later player, as a junior, as an upperclassman, it was like, okay, he dropped a little bit weight because he was legit 250. He dropped some weight. He was sort of built like Braylon Allen, but Braylon Allen had the footwork of a smaller back. Dillon was able to get that later in his career at Boston College, and he looked better later than he did earlier. Estime already has that footwork. Mm. But the issue is, and the same thing right now with Dillon. Both are primarily front side, play side runners. So if it's 34 zone, they're hitting the four hole. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to work backside to, the seven hole or five hole. You said 34, coach. I am going to the 34. I'm going 34. I'm going front side. And that's where if you beat these guys to the spot first, they're kind of dead in the water. But if they beat you to the spot and they're able to pick up that momentum, that's when we see the big bruising runs of them either squirting past a linebacker or running through arm tackles in the lane.
So I know I mentioned it already. He's 20 years old. You mentioned Braylon Allen, your number one running back. Part of that equation is that he's still just 20 years old. The age for these running backs, is it entirely about how long their runway is in the NFL, or is it easier to project growth from a skills perspective for a guy with less experience, a 20-year-old, versus somebody who might be 23 or 24?
It's more about the runway because the skill is a skill. The only things you can improve on as a pro is technique. So we talked about that with blocking. You can become a little bit more comfortable catching the football, but it's still maybe not as natural. But blocking is where you kind of see the biggest growth. Even route running, guys getting better at running option routes is somewhere we can see growth within a player. But you're really talking about the runway. If I get a running back that's 20, you feel like, okay, I can get seven good solid seasons out of him. The problem, the two backs that we're talking about that are 20 are technically considered bruisers, right? So their game is like, you look at, okay, we may have 7 years of production, but they may be closer to their ceiling as is a 24-year-old smaller Ray Davis, right? Because of how they run. So you want to see them develop a little bit more wiggle. And I'm glad this is one thing Jerome Bettis talked about, the difference between LA Ram Jerome Bettis and Pittsburgh still a Jerome Bettis. He realized his second year in LA, like I can't keep doing this at this rate. So when he got to Pittsburgh, he dropped a little bit of weight and developed a little bit more wiggle, which kind of helped him not take as many direct shots. That's where these guys would have to really develop their game. I think Allen does it a little bit better right now than Estime.
Excellent, excellent stuff. One more running back. RB10 by current ADP, Will Shipley out of Clemson, 5'11", 206, 21 years old. good speed at 4.4, had 69 catches over his last two seasons. Let's just start here because we've talked about 10 running backs now. At RB10, is that too high, too low, or just about right for Will Shipley?
I feel like it's just about right because when we watch Will Shipley over the course of his career at Clemson, you always wonder, like, we knew he was a good receiver. We knew he had good versatility. Like, you line him up in a slot. You could have him return kicks and punts. He has good quickness, good elusiveness. But as a running back, he always left a lot of meat on the table, a lot of meat on the bones, right, as they say. And I just feel like it just wasn't like, okay, can they get better at tailback? And we saw the backup, who's going to be in the 2025 draft class, look a hell of a lot better just from a pure running back standpoint. But from an all-purpose standpoint, you can't take Shipley off the field because he's so good at a lot of different things. And I think that's going to be his lane as a pro. It's like he's the power five version of Dylan Lauby, right? Because how New Hampshire used Lauby is how Clemson started to ultimately use Shipley. And I feel like that's how Shipley is going to be utilized as a pro. You could even look at, you know, how teams use, we love to talk about the James White and the Deion Lewis's. And there's a reason why those guys had like long careers as, you know, movable pieces. I feel like Shipley can do just that.
So Shipley, a very good pass catcher, also very good in pass protection.
Yeah, and that's one area where I think he was underrated because that kind of got him on the field early as a freshman. He's not afraid to get in there and get his head, you know, right in the chest of a linebacker. He'll hold his own enough to where the quarterback can get the ball off. So he wasn't a liability. And when you're able to not only block, it kind of calms the pass rush that they can. They're not going to blitz you as much. They'll try. But by him being so dynamic as a receiver, now you just slip him out on a scat pattern. And it's like, okay, dang, we got to abandon blitz. And so now you've given the quarterback more time in that regard. Plus, you got an ideal matchup with him versus a backer one-on-one.
So we've talked about three backs today that we think are going to be pretty good pass catchers. Ray Davis, Bucky Irving, Will Shipley. I want you to put your NFL GM hat on. What order are you drafting these guys in the NFL draft? Because that will have a really big impact on what order we draft them in terms of fantasy football.
Adding the NFL draft hat and adding the context of kickoff returns, man, it probably would go Bucky Irvin, Shipley, and then Ray Davis in that order based off, you know, the NFL game as opposed to where I have these guys individually graded. Because you have to factor in who can help me out on special teams. And then you factor in, okay, who can be a downfield threat as a receiver. And though with those two things as the backdrop, those two players usurp a Ray Davis.
Okay, that's interesting. It might make it a little bit more complicated for fantasy football players when evaluate, because we've leaned pretty heavily on draft capital as how do these teams value the guys. We assume they're going to give them the ball, but if they're giving them the ball on special teams plays that don't count for fantasy, would you say reversing that order, because you put it in the order that you would draft him as an NFL GM, is Ray Davis the most likely to have a really good season as a rusher?
Wow, that's a great question. Probably not, man, because if you're trying to draft it as an NFL GM, you're probably going to realize – if you're drafting Ray Davis, let's say Ray Davis goes to Chicago. He's not going to play over Swift.
Right.
You know, he's going to be trying to split time with Herbert. Right. And that's where things get murky. Okay.
All right. So Will Shipley, somewhere right in the middle of that group. That's the end of the top 10 by ADP. We talked about a couple of guys that you like maybe better than some of the guys on this list. I do know we had at least one question already in the chat. I wanted to talk a little bit about some maybe deeper sleepers. And it used to be that the term sleeper was used about guys nobody's talking about. Right. Well, this isn't somebody nobody's talking about. It's not somebody nobody's heard of. And that's partially because of his name and who his dad was. But we had a question in the chat about Frank Gore Jr. So what's your scouting report on him? And what do you think his NFL prospects look like?
I thought I wasn't going to be a fan of his game, but watching him through do damage to my raging cages throughout the course of his Sun Belt Conference career. He's my fifth back. And I got to see him play live at the East West Shrine Bowl. I was thoroughly impressed with his ability as a total playmaker because he can run routes deeper down the field. He has kickoff return ability. He could throw the ball. You know what I'm saying? He threw a couple touchdown passes in his career, like deep touchdown passes, because he was a high school quarterback. And he was a lot quicker than anticipated. So, and he was very durable, which is, you know, kind of, I mean, that's the MO of Frank Gore, right?
Okay. That's the genes. That's right. The genes.
So I was impressed. I was like, okay, I was shocked that he came in at 5'7", you know, but at if you're going to be short at a position, why not be a running back? Right. So I do like him, and I feel like the league liked him as well, based off what I was seeing, a lot of the communication, without spilling too much, at the East-West Shrine Bowl. They love the kid. He's a football's guy, because he could talk the game like coaches. Obviously, he has the pedigree from his dad, and you know, he can carve his own way. I think he's probably a better receiver than his dad, to be honest.
He does have a very interesting receiving profile. So at RB5, definitely ahead of a lot of the guys for Emory that we've talked about today. Had two more backs that I see here in the chat. And if I see a couple more, we've got a few more minutes. Dylan Laub, which I think you referenced him, but I'd like to hear a little bit more what you think of him. And then I might mess this name up. But Kamani Vidal?
Yeah, listen, I'll start with Laub because I called his game against Monmouth. And the other guy, it was fun to watch him and Jaden Sherton, who was on the other side, go toe-to-toe. Sheridan was more of the runner handoff guy and let him go 80. And Lobby was essentially a slot receiver. And it was fascinating to watch. At first, I was like, man, they're spamming targets to him, right? It's like, first play, pass, 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 pass. But then you saw him flex out in the slot, and it was like, and they put a safety on him. He gave the safety to Blues. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, you know, he gave him a little shimmy and then was able to break free on the post. The ball didn't go his way. But if you're working safeties like that, and you can carry the ball, it's like you might be a problem.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so he's good. And Vidal may not have the long speed, but he has good body control, good balance, which is important for a running back. You don't knock him over. You kind of bump him to the side. He has good interior contact vision to where you see him sort of like how Jonathan Brooks has this, where you see him make that last second cut, that last little shimmy to kind of give himself a little bit more room to fall forward or to really break a tackle. So he's very underrated. He was so productive, but you kind of get into the situation where he was at Troy for 5 or 6 years, right? So age could be an issue, but he had a really good Senior Bowl. He can catch the ball well. He's solid in pass pro. So you see him getting there and stick his nose in there. I think he is an underrated player, obviously coming from the Sun Best Conference.
But you did talk to us about Keaton Mitchell last year. So I'm going to ask before we go here, and if you don't have anybody, we've talked about a lot of backs, that's okay. Is there anybody, any other running back that we've not talked about, not mentioned his name yet on this show that dynasty managers should be aware of?
Well, I kind of dropped his name all throughout, and Jaden Sherton out of Monmouth. So put that on your head. That was a free one, right? But this guy has been garnering a lot of attention on the All-Star Game circuit at the HBCU Combine. He had the best workout. He's been good throughout the course of his career at Alcorn State, and that's Jarvion Howard. Came in at 5'9", about 210, ran low 4.4, high 4.4, low 4.5, caught the ball extremely well. He is a one-cut downhill explosive runner, and he's been garnering a lot of attention, guys. So that's one to keep an eye on. And I was on the broadcast for the Hula Bowl, and everyone kind of knows this guy's name now, but Tyrone Tracy was a former receiver at Iowa, turned running back at Purdue. And speaking with him on the sideline at the Hula Bowl, I was like, hey, man, watching you run, you know, you don't look like a guy that just learned how to play running back. You look like you've been playing running back your whole life. You find some guys that have played running back your whole life that run like receivers. And so he bulked up a little bit. He's about 5'11", 215. So you know he has the hands as a receiver, being a former Power 5 wide receiver, but now he has the ability and the wherewithal to be a runner and ran well all throughout the week of the Hula Bowl practices and in the game scored a touchdown. That's one I feel like could help you out dynasty-wise because no one is talking about him from that perspective.
So I'm going to set a reminder on my phone for 6 months, October 12th. We'll go back. check the last 5 minutes of the 412 show, see which one of these guys is now, everybody's adding them on the waiver wire, and then give Emery some flowers. Emery, thank you so much. That was a fantastic job. Tell people one more time where they can find your draft guide.
footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. It's the largest draft guide in existence, full color PDF. And if you go back and get the guide from 20 to 24, you've gotten 4,300 scouting reports. So not only do you help you out yourself out in the NFL, but UFL, CFL, be a well-rounded football guy and win a bunch of fantasy leagues across different leagues.
That is fantastic stuff, Emery. Thank you to everybody who was in the chat helping us out, giving us suggestions. Thank you to everybody listening to the podcast. That will do it for our running back previews. We will be back next Tuesday with a couple of special, very special guests to break down the 2024 rookie quarterback class.